Bud Steen, 30 years as CFL official, now evaluator. And Bud, a few things to discuss today. We did get an email coming in from Clark asking about the Montreal-BC game late. There was the pass in the back of the end zone. It looked like it was screening by the Montreal defensive back. He actually took excerpts from the rule book, yep. Right? The eligible receiver have equal right to the ball and are entitled to the positions they occupy. If a player commits pass interference when a former pass is deemed uncatchable, pass interference shall not be called if it occurs after the ball has been touched by an eligible receiver of either team. Inadvertent tripping by a player from equal position shall not be ruled as interference. Tripping an opponent from behind shall be considered accidental pass interference. Screening, face guarding of an opponent during an attempt to catch the ball is pass interference. Why was this not screening?
You know, this is a great question. And obviously from someone that cares passionately about the game, enough to dig into the rule book and to start the process. And what the question really underlines is how difficult it is to consistently apply the rules of football, because there is the black and white of the written material on the page, and then there is the interpretation of that black and white on the page. We, over the last few years, have been meeting with the clubs in the spring and delivering to them a presentation and a manual that we now produce annually called Standards. And this book includes all kinds of information on how the officiating department would interpret that particular provision of that particular rule. And it's not just all about pass interference. The book talks about holding. It talks about what's procedure, offside, et cetera, et cetera. But drilling down to Clark's question, I saw that during the game, made a note of it. When I was working through the cut-ups and doing the evaluation of it, I looked at it many, many times, and it is extremely close to screening. Screening, according to our standards book, is defined as hands or arms up in the air above the shoulder level. Okay, so in the game Friday night, yes. The hands were above the shoulder level, and interfering with the receiver's view of the flight and the arrival of the ball. And so it requires that the hands and or the arms will be held up for a period of time prior to the ball arriving. Now, if you've still got the game on PVR, look at it, or you can probably actually find it on TSN, but go back and look at it. His right hand is up and held up for a period of time. No question in my mind that the right hand was there for a sufficient period of time, that had it been interfering with the receiver's view of the flight and arrival of the ball, that would have warranted the flag. The left hand comes up relatively quickly as the pass is coming in. And in my view, view of that play, the hand or arm was not up for a sufficient period of time. It would be more described as that hand shooting up to attempt to knock the ball or touch the ball so that the receiver couldn't catch it. But I believe that it was a great no call by the field judge on that particular play. And comes very, very close to how we would interpret pass interference screening. So, again, great question, Clark. Thanks very much for asking.
So you're talking about the idea of how there's the rules and the interpretation of the rules. How hard is it to get everyone to see and to set the same interpretation across? Because we all have, well, three of us could watch a play, and we all have different, oh, yes or no, or maybe so, call or not. So how do you get as a group of officials all on that same page?
And not just group of officials, but group of officials and coaches.
Oh, wow.
Like it is
small.
extremely, extremely difficult. We spend a lot of time going through film. So with respect to pass interference at camp, we would have, an hour and a half, where we look at video from the previous season or two, and we would show examples of things like, here, this is a good one for screening. No, leave this one alone. This one isn't screening. You know, here he has restricted. Here he has hands on a receiver, but he doesn't restrict him, so it's not a foul. So we hammer on that. And then when we're dealing with the coaches, again, we take out video as much as they'll allow us to show them because they're on tighter time schedule. And again, going through as much film work as we can, pointing out to them how we intend on calling it. So that's, I guess, phase 1A and 1B. Now implementation is a different thing because it's far easier to look at something in two dimensions on the screen and go, oh, yeah, yeah, okay, I see. Yeah, I see your pass interference there. But now, in the moment of time, in that millisecond that you have on the field, hopefully being in the right position with the ball coming in, now what do you think? And that's where hopefully a bit of coaching, a bit of persuasion through the evaluation process, a bit of direction along the way, we can fine tune the officials a little bit if they're demonstrating issues, and we can attempt to reach that consistency that you talked about. But I would say that it is virtually impossible to have all 45 of us exactly on the same page at the same moment.
Yeah, it's delusional to think that that's realistic. You can sit with your group of friends and watch a play, and they're going to have different opinions on what happened on a play. It doesn't matter what it is. Now, many were wondering about the Mike Moore penalty.
In the Calgary game. You know, a very disappointing situation because at that stage of the game, the Eskimos had come out, had demonstrated some prowess. They had moved the ball quite smartly. They were looking like they had overcome the blues from Monday afternoon in Calgary, and they had had pressure on Calgary on Calgary's series. It appeared that they had ended that series and were forcing Calgary to punt the ball away, but the tackle by 96 was outside of the strike zone, and we make it very clear that if you're going to hit the quarterback when he is a passer, and in this case Mitchell was standing and looking for receivers. He wasn't on the run, so he was not a runner. That passer is entitled to both high hit protection and low hit protection. So you cannot be tackling him at or below the knees. And that one was down below the knees, clearly a penalty. And then it got exacerbated by another individual on the ball club getting a little bit goofy with his mouth. And so plus 25 for Calgary leads to a field goal, and quickly the game turned around.
Talking with Bud Steen, Inside the Stripes, all things related to CFL and their officiating. Text coming in here. What about Sewell roughing the passer penalty for grabbing Bo Levi Mitchell leg and bringing him down for a sack? He didn't hit him, didn't land on him, just grabbed his ankle. Why was that call made?
Again, you cannot hit the passer outside of the strike zone. Knees to shoulders. That's the only place you can hit a passer. And it doesn't matter if it appears gentle or not. You can't be taking a quarterback down by grabbing his ankle. Unless he is a runner. That is, if he is looking to run out of the pocket and then reestablish himself as a passer in the interim period between being a passer, realizing that he's got to move or get tackled, so he starts to run and then sets up again to throw the pass. In that interim period, in there, he loses the low hit protection. So if Mitchell was on the run, then Mondo could take him out by tripping him at the ankle with his hand.
Quickly, but I know Strud's wanted to talk about Jack in the
Miles
NFL,
Jack.
Yeah,
so I don't know if you see it, that for everyone, just give some context. With Jacksonville Jaguars, there was an incident, and Miles Jack, Jags linebacker, threw a punch first half of the game against Kansas City, and he got really hot. And you know, I'm not going to specifically talk about this play, but in a situation where a player like that has completely lost his mind, you know, how does the official handle, where do you go about getting him to where he cannot do any damage to himself and the team and all that stuff?
Yeah, that's a good question, because it does happen. These young men are so charged up when they're on the field, and it's a delicate situation for them, because in some cases, if a player doesn't perform in a particular quarter or half or ball game, they may be done. They may find themselves on the practice roster. They may find themselves getting cut. So they're out there giving their all plus some more on virtually every play. One of the things that I talked to my crews about was to try to find some friends, or friends might be the wrong term, but some assistance on every ball club. Usually with the referee and the umpire, it's the offensive lineman for all kinds of reasons. Number one, they're Canadian, and Canadians are generally pretty decent folk. So you've got someone that will actually listen to what you have to say. And if the pot boiled over, I would attempt to get one of the friendlies, so to speak, to help disengage. One of the pieces that I was most proud about in the Chris Jones era was that we were able to take Odell Willis from one of the most volatile players on the field to a peacemaker. Somehow he was able, through the work that we did with him at practice, to realize the benefit of settling his own teammates down. Because when that stuff happens, it has a nasty way of kind of falling all over the table, so to speak. And now everybody is worried, and everybody starts getting a little bit trigger happy, so to speak. So it's far better if a ball club can get the troublemaker themselves, round them up, and get them off the field. Now, in the game this weekend, in the clip you showed me, that player was, unfortunately, he had literally lost his mind. What once we're escorting a player off the field, first of all, we've got a standard protocol on who does it and how they do it. And the key to it is to show your presence so that the player realizes that he's been quote unquote busted and he's on his way to the dressing room and or jail, so to speak. We're getting him out of there. But you don't look at him. You stare straight ahead, and you do not talk to him unless he asks you a reasonable, direct question, and then you answer the question. But it's the process is to get him from the playing field off into the hands of club security and on his way to the dressing room, where if he wants to continue to lose his mind, that's up to him and the ball club, and it has nothing to do with the officials and the public.
But good stuff. We'll see what happens this coming weekend. A few teams, the Eskimos are on a bye. They come back. It's Ricky Ray night. And we will see what unfolds this coming week in the CFL. And now we can kind of transfer over, because as Strud's pointed out, there are different situations in the NFL that sometimes correlate to the CFL. And often there's rules that are different, and a lot of people don't know the difference. So we'll talk about both of them. Thanks.
Okay, good. Thanks, guys.